Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here. And from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The issue of transgender rights has captured enormous attention recently, especially with North Carolina facing an economic backlash due to its law concerning bathroom use and transgender people. Here in New Hampshire, that debate was set aside earlier this month when the House tabled a bill aimed at barring discrimination based on gender identity in housing, employment, and public accommodations. But the issue will be back, and with it, questions, confusion, and even some fears about what it means to be transgender. So today in The Exchange, we are opening up this conversation. Whether you or a loved one don't identify along traditional gender lines, or you're confused about words like gender expression or gender non-binary. Let's hear from everyone. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have four guests. Dr. Paul Cody is here, licensed psychologist and gender specialist at Equality Health Center in Concord with more than 30 years experience. And Dr. Cody, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Rachel Allen, nurse practitioner at Equality Health Center, where she provides transgender health services. And Rachel, it's great to meet you too. Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Also with us, Linz Jackaus, campaign manager for Freedom New Hampshire, a nonpartisan organization that educates and advocates for transgender. Linz is a non-binary transgender person. And Linz, it's really good for you to come in. Thank you so
much.
Thank
you so much.
And also with us, Jerry Cannon, transgender representative for PFLAG New Hampshire. Cannon was assigned male at birth and now identifies as female. And Jerry, welcome back to The Exchange. Good to see you.
It's glad to be here.
Thanks. Well, Jerry, to you first, what does transgender mean? And what's your own story?
Transgender is always confusing to people, but essentially it's the people who are born physically one gender but identify as the other gender or another gender, let's put it that way. And so part of the challenge we have is, especially when someone is born, is that a doctor makes a decision at birth as to who this person is based on what they physically see. And sometimes most of the time it's correct, but once in a while, it's not.
And you were the once in a while.
I'm a once in a while person. because I knew, by the time I got to my teenage years, I knew I wasn't a boy or didn't identify completely as a boy, but I didn't know quite what it was, and there was nothing to read or understand about it, because that was back in the 60s. In fact, I couldn't even talk about it back then, or it was a quick trip to the hospital or the asylum.
And so you better not say anything.
That's about what it was. Especially when you grow up in a French Catholic family, it was like, don't even mention it to anybody. And so you put it away because you can't associate with anybody else. And I thought I was weird. I thought I was a freak. And I tried to understand it, and I was hoping it'll go away as I get older. And when I marry and have a family, it's going to go away. It didn't. And it plagued me. And it ate at me. And people talk about bullying, and bullying is nothing. The own internal struggle is even worse.
I know you've told this story before, Jerry, but when did you finally make the break and say, look, I know I was born this way, but I'm not this way?
I finally decided at around the age of 45 that I needed to tell my family.
Wow, that's pretty far along.
That was far along. I tried to put on the front that everyone expected me to be. The oldest male child in a family, a very active person in the computer industry, and it was tough. I finally had to make that decision that I needed to let somebody know, and it sort of came out. At that point in time, I had learned because of the internet, and there were connections to other people, and I was reading stories of other people, and I said, I could have written those myself. There's so many similarities. And I decided it was time. I needed to find out more about who I was. And the only way to do that was to be more public with my family. I said, I'm going to be going off trying to understand this. And then I sort of met other people, and we started to really start to socialize as a female. So every, at least older transgender people, all of a sudden have to learn how to socialize in the gender that they're identifying with. And that's actually part of standards of care for a transgender.
We're going to talk a lot about words and so forth and terminology. And when I introduced you, Jerry, I used the words that, you know, the guides tell me to use,
right.
That says assigned male at birth. Why can't we just say born male?
Because someone makes a decision when you're born, whether you've got male genitalia or female genitalia, they make a decision based on that. And it may not necessarily be correct. We also have what was previously called hermaphrodites or intersex people who are born with very ambiguous genitalia. And so someone makes a decision at that point and says, we have to put something on the birth certificate. So they make those decisions. And it isn't until later in life that people can decide to make that change, that decision. I have changed my birth record, so it now says Jerry as my name and female.
Jerry, G-E-R-R-I.
That's right.
Lince, what does transgender mean to you, and what's your own journey?
Yeah, so I'm someone who doesn't neatly fit in the category of either male or female. I was assigned female at birth, but growing up, especially when I hit puberty, felt really uncomfortable with that language about becoming a woman, my body changing, and I didn't know that there were words for that. And I didn't see anyone else identifying that way or having a similar story. I started to meet other people who fell outside of that male-female binary in my early 20s, and I found that really reassuring. Something clicked, and it made me feel a whole lot less alone. So I identify as either non-binary or genderqueer, which just means that I don't fit into either male or female. I don't feel comfortable with that. I am gender neutral person. So what that means to me, it can mean a lot of different things for a lot of different people. But for me, it means I would like you to use gender neutral language. So person instead of women, girl, lady, etc.
What's uncomfortable for you about identifying either or?
It just doesn't feel true to who I am. It makes me feel uncomfortable, and there isn't, it's a little bit hard to like put an exact, like pinpoint exactly what the thing is, but really any gender just makes me really uncomfortable, and I want people to see me as a person outside of any gender.
How does it feel to you to hear a story like Jerry's, you know, from a much earlier era compared to your experience today? And if I may ask how old you are.
I am going to be 27 in May. I think that this generation, there's a lot more conversation about gender and what it means to fall out of these neat little boxes that we've are conditioned to think about from the time that we're really young. So I see a lot more people my age being a little bit more comfortable with being either a binary trans person who wants to transition from male to female or vice versa, or saying I don't fit into either gender. And I think that's really great. But I've certainly learned a lot from people who have had this experience from the time that I was a very, very young kid.
Well, it's interesting. And people hearing that we're doing a show on transgender today might understand Jerry's experience better than yours because, you know, Jerry's is a little more clear, you know, assigned male at birth or born a male, however you want to put it.
That's
and
right.
then very early on decided, ooh, I'm internally or emotionally, psychologically, I'm female. Yours is a little harder to figure out, Linz.
Sure. And I'm definitely very patient with people who I don't expect people to just look at me when they first meet me and say, I see you as a person, not a gender. Obviously, people make assumptions, but at the point where I explain that to someone and say, it would mean a lot if you could use this language to describe me, I want people to take steps toward respecting that.
Well, I definitely want to bring our two health practitioners into this conversation. But one more question for both of you, Linz and Jerry, since you raised the issue of language. Linz, I printed out a glossary of, you know, terms that you're supposed to use and not use, and it was 4 or 5 pages long. So for your average person, a little confusing. What are some words, Linz, that feel antiquated or maybe even offensive to you?
Again, just on assigned female at birth or assigned male at birth is much better than born male or born female, as was said, but really, I think I would encourage people who are new to this issue to not get hung up on, I need to learn this exact vocabulary, and to just really listen to individuals and the words that they feel comfortable with, and to ask questions about what is going to be the best way to respect you as a person, because everybody's experience is really different. So it's less about memorizing a list of words and asking people about their individual lived experiences.
Jerry, do you want to add to that?
Yes. I think the best thing is if someone doesn't know how to address someone, it's okay to ask. It's the polite thing to do. It's how would you like to be addressed? And we will volunteer that information because that's good for conversation so that people know how to communicate with us. And sometimes it's very awkward. And if someone refers to us in a tough way, in a difficult way, or the wrong way, we will correct them. And usually we understand that people don't quite fully grasp it, and that's okay.
The number for you to join us with your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at what it means to be transgender and exploring evolving notions of gender identity in our culture. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can respond on Facebook or Twitter if you'd like, NHPR Exchange. And Dr. Paul Cody, as I said earlier, you've been working for 20, 30 years with people who have gender identity issues. What's the difference between gender and sex?
Well, there's a whole lot that could be said about that. The simplest thing would be to say that sex is our physical morphology. As Jerry referred to, you know, babies born, they usually look between the baby's legs, and based on external genitalia appearance, they say, oh, this is the sex. And gender is our identity that we come to understand ourselves as by age 2 to 4. And that's often when some transgender people will first start expressing that I'm the other gender or another gender. Like Jerry and Linz have mentioned, there are many different life stories. There are trans people who have announced it too, and there are others who have disclosed to people as senior citizens. So I really want this narrative to open things up, not to think there's one life path. But really, sex is around physical and physical being, and gender is around how we think of ourselves.
So sex is a physical attribute, and gender is a social construct, Paul, that we're all sort of socialized to be male or female. And some people, like Linz, say, don't put me in that box.
I would not, as a psychologist, I would not go so far as to say gender is a completely social construct. I feel that there's an interaction between our biology and our socialization.
Hormones.
That's why hormone therapy for many trans people is very helpful, both physically and also for some psychologically. But sex, physical, includes things like chromosomes, genetics, hormones in the uterine, in life, you know, after birth, And also just the idea that gender, we get constructed in what's mirrored back to us. So how we're taught to behave as men and women in this binary system. And I just want to throw in here really briefly that other societies have more than two genders. And in living Native American languages, more than 250, 168 of them have terms for third or even fourth gender statuses. So this is not something that is just happening now. It's more like our society is beginning to be more inclusive, whereas others have been so more for longer.
I think I read something just recently about a South Pacific island culture where there was a third gender.
I think that's probably Papua New Guinea, but also in Thailand and India, there are third gender statuses.
I'll hear from you too, Rachel. What is the difference between sex and gender? And just some of your thoughts on what we've heard from the other guests.
That's a great question. And I think just hearing the experience of Jerry and Lentz, we can really see how variable people's experience of their body, of their kind of sex assigned at birth, versus how they feel inside, who they are, how they want to express themselves. When we think about a term like gender identity, transgender, gender nonconformity, these are big terms that are umbrellas for a lot of individual people's varied experiences. And so I think in understanding that, we do better when we really hear one person's story about who they are, how they feel, and where they want to go. So medically, that's kind of what I'm interested in, is hearing what their goals are, how they got there, and then how I can help them network with the care that they need. And so that is kind of a balance between providing services for the body that they have, so preventative health for the anatomy that's there, and then if people choose to, helping them access hormone therapy, possible surgical interventions, mental health, social services to get them to the point where they can be thriving as the person that they are. And that's truly our goal.
So in a way, you're providing physical health services for transgender folks, and Paul is providing psychological help.
Yes.
On both ends. Let's go to our listeners, all of you, again, and then a ton more questions for everybody. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. And Ashley's on the air from Meredith. Hi, Ashley. Go ahead. You're in the exchange.
Hi there. This is thank you very much for having this topic on. I just had two thoughts. I'm a mom. I've got two young children. And it drives me crazy. I see, mostly around Valentine's Day, but it happens a lot of the time, these T-shirts and onesies and things that basically automatically label very young children and infants by cis hetero norms, you know, heartbreaker, stud muffin, ladies man. You know, we sort of slap these things on these little babies that, you know, you have no idea what their gender or sexuality is going to be. And I just think, you know, we can be more cognizant of these messages that we're sending the world and sending our children from infancy.
So the world is painted in pink and blue, Ashley, you're saying.
Yeah, well, it's, and, you know, I mean, I've got a boy and a girl, and, you know, we've got a lot of pink and blue and trucks and Barbies, but it's, you know, if I try to follow their interests, at least, and not, like I said, just buy these shirts that have these statements on them that tell them who they are, I guess.
Ashley, thanks a lot for the call. Do you want to jump in, Linz?
Sure. Yeah, I think that it is a little weird how our society tries to put these labels related to gender on really young kids. I know I was really lucky to have parents who still have some questions about gender, but who let me, you know, dress up in a dance costume one day and then put on baggy clothes and play basketball with the boys down the street the next day. So I think kids should have the freedom to explore whatever that looks like for them.
We've got a lot more to talk about after a break, and we're going to talk to a pediatric endocrinologist who works with children. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, exploring transgender and gender identity. The Exchange number for you to join us with your questions, comments, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. With us now on the line is Dr. Nancy Charest. She's a pediatric endocrinologist with Dartmouth-Hitchcock. She works with children exploring gender identity. And Dr. Charest, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me.
How long have you been practicing in this field, and how has your practice grown over that time?
So I've been a pediatric endocrinologist for 30 years, but I have only started to see transgender children and teens for the past 5 years. And I didn't really anticipate the volume of referrals that I would get. I started, obviously, with one or two patients, and I now have 80.
Wow.
Transgender children and teens, mostly that I see in Manchester, but I also see some in Lebanon. So it's, I would say in the last 2 years, it's just really the need for an endocrinologist to evaluate and treat these children has really grown.
What do they want or need from you, Dr. Charest?
So there's two things. Maybe three things that I can provide. One is I'm starting to get referrals on the very young pre-pubertal child. The parents bring the child in, say, I don't know what this is. You know, how much should I be doing? Should I do a social transition for my child who's identifying in a different gender than they were assigned? And I do just a little bit of education and say that most of the data says that in the pre-pubertal child, that this could definitely be a stage and not permanent, that most children will not persist in identifying in a different gender. And I try to get the parents hooked up with a therapist who specializes in gender issues in children. You know, it's an interesting that people are now so aware of people who are transgender that I have to caution parents of young children not to make any kind of permanent changes when this could be a gender that's in flux. So that's the first thing that I do. The second thing, and this is probably really important for the listeners because I don't think this information is out there, is that we can see a child in early puberty who's identifying in a different gender and needs therapy, but also I can provide what's called a puberty blocker. And what this is a very well-known medication that I've used for almost 30 years for kids who go into puberty early. Like I can see a four-year-old girl that's in puberty, and I can use this medicine to delay further pubertal development, take the medication away, and the kids go back into puberty at the normal time. Well, you can use this same medication in the early pubertal, possibly transgender child to prevent them from going through the puberty that is causing them such distress because it does their body changes are not matching who they feel they are. And this medication has an excellent safety profile, is totally reversible. So even if the person, you know, decides, well, no, I'm not transgender. You know, I believe, you know, I'm the same gender I was assigned at birth. You could take this medication away and they would continue in the puberty that their biology would say.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, Dr. Charest. Yeah, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but I did want to ask you about that. So I'm glad you raised it.
Right.
Because, you know, this is a child's developing body. You know, hormones, as you know way better than me, are linked to all sorts of important processes in the body. So I did wonder about the risks of doing this.
You know, certainly we don't have long-term, you know, decades of data on what doing this medication, you know, will it have harmful effects when you use it in the, you know, early teenage years. We have plenty of data on it being entirely safe in a much younger child.
In those cases you mentioned, yeah.
Right. So there is some uncertainty here. But, you know, as far as we can tell, the first children that were treated this way were actually in the Netherlands, and that was in the late 90s. And so far, there are not any adverse effects in treating, you know, early pubertal children with this medication. And if you look at their psychological well-being when they've been treated this early, and you're not allowing them to go through the puberty that is causing them so much psychological harm. Their psychological outlook is extremely promising, and as a matter of fact, their profiles aren't any different than the normal population, and that's very different than the transgender population who doesn't get treatment or help until much later.
What's that first visit, Dr. Charest, like with the family? You know, what are the kids saying? What are the parents saying? Are the parents kind of, you know, deers in the headlights with kind of wondering what's going on?
Yeah, it kind of depends on the age. So when I see an early pubertal child, typically the parent has heard about this treatment and is kind of wondering and advocating for their child. The child may or may not have read something on the internet. The older child who comes in, you know, the more in the middle of puberty, 15 or 16 years of age, that is a dynamic I was not prepared for. The kid child comes in, I want hormones, and I've read all about it, and I know they're safe, and this is what I want. And the parent is looking at me like, I have no idea what's happened here. And so, you know, it's a lot of education. I have to tell the child, we have to do a thorough evaluation. We have to have you evaluated by a therapist. And I have to, at the same time, you know, let the parent know that, you know, we're going to take our time with this, but this certainly sounds like this is real. And so I'm kind of negotiating a fine line between the child who wants treatment immediately and the parent who maybe just wants to hear about this, but is thinking we're not going to do anything till they can make their own decision at age 18.
Well, Dr. Stress, last question for you, please. What do you think people outside this field don't understand most commonly?
That's hard to say. I would say most people don't actually understand what's available out there. And so that's a hurdle that I have to climb all the time, you know, avenues of treatment for these children. But I would say the most common thing is that parents and other individuals think if it's a child, it's going to go away. And, you know, that might be very true of the young child. Most of the data says if the person is identifying in a different gender in puberty, that is very, very unlikely to be a stage, and that you should be listening to the child, listening to the teen, and getting them help. And whether that help is just therapy, you know, and maybe the person doesn't want to transition hormonally, that's fine. But to just say, you know, we're going to wait till they're, you know, 18, I think that can be very detrimental.
Well, Dr. Charest, we know you're busy. Thank you very much for being with us.
Okay, thank you for having me.
That's Dr. Nancy Charest, pediatric endocrinologist with Dartmouth-Hitchcock. And Dr. Cody, did you want to jump in there too? She was talking about the emotional aspects
of
this.
And the part of what most people don't understand. I just want to say that most of us in this society, we live within the binary gender system more or less comfortably. And so when we encounter people who are gender variant or transgender, it really can be a stretch for people to come to understand such different experience from their own. And it can be really hard. I think that's why more average people are comfortable with the idea of someone who, well, the narrative of, you know, trapped in the wrong body, which I don't like that phrase. But, okay, so they switch from one to the other. That's the binary. People can start to wrap their minds around that. Whereas when people are non-binary, then that can be more challenging because we're trained from such a young age to think pink and blue from the little caps in the nursery when we're born.
Let's go to our listeners, all of you. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And from Ossipee, Elliot's on the line. Hi, Elliot. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. You know, I come from, I have a brother who's has questions about his identity, and I'm concerned how we're treating people at such a youth age to be one way or the other. This whole blue and pink cap thing, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, we should be teaching someone to either become a strong woman or a strong man. And if we put all these confusions in there, kids are so confused to begin with. But when we make it acceptable at as early an age as that, I mean, I just don't see how we're giving our youth a chance to be anything but confused.
So, Elliot,
and what's a generation of confused people running around?
So we're too permissive, and then that just creates confusion for young people. That seems to be what
you're saying. For kids, I mean, kids don't know what. I mean, you know, when I was younger, you know, gay wasn't bad, but now it's on. But, you know, every cartoon you see, I mean, we're sort of ingraining this into all of our kids. And surprise, surprise, now the numbers have gone up of how many adolescents think they're gay or transgender or whatever it may be. And I don't know the terms. And
well,
I don't
Elliot,
mean to be offensive. But
no, I appreciate the call.
I am deeply concerned over this issue.
Well, I appreciate the call. And let's talk about that. And I have heard other people say what Elliot says. Maybe I'll turn to you first, Linz, but I want to hear from everybody. That society's gotten more accepting, as Elliot, you know, put it, permissive, and then that encourages, as he put it, confusion. I wonder what you think.
Yeah, I think it can be confusing for people who have not met a transgender person, not met a family with a kid who has been having questions about their gender from a very young age, to understand what that looks like. I have had the opportunity to meet a lot of families with trans kids who have known from a very young age. Many of them testified at the hearing for the bill that was just before the State House that would add gender identity non-discrimination to the state's human rights law. And a lot of them have found puberty blockers to be a really critical and even life-saving. 40% of transgender individuals will attempt suicide in their life. And so this is a life or death issue for a whole lot of people. And getting this on the right track at an early age can be really, really critical.
I'm glad you called because, again, I think this is something that we've heard from other people. And I wonder what you think first, Rachel, but I want to hear from everybody. The idea that as society becomes more accepting, people are choosing to live a certain way, and Elliot seems to feel that it's just creating confusion.
Yeah, and I'm glad that Elliot brought that up as well. I think one thing to consider is we should try to move away from underestimating kids, because I think kids are really smart, and I don't think that many kids are confused. I think that adults are confused, and oftentimes we're the ones that are projecting that onto kids. So I agree that we should be aiming to raise strong kids, and we should be aiming to raise strong humans that can be themselves and move through the world feeling like themselves. It's not surprising that we get so much confusion when, you know, our elected officials are choosing to invest resources in debating where people are allowed to use the bathroom. It can be kind of obscured that this is a real, these have real health outcomes. So gender identity issues can really set people up to have many hurdles. And Linz makes a great point about some of the mental health outcomes, but we also see that in lack of accessing preventative care and just kind of all the way down the line. So I would agree that there's a lot of confusion, but I think we should be careful about projecting that onto kids. I don't think kids are as confused as we think they are.
Well, and Dr. Cody, Dr. Charest said that she, when she started this work 5 years ago, she had just a few patients. Now she has 80. Does that mean that, you know, in previous generations, those children just would have to sort of stuff it down like Jerry did? Or does it mean that society, in being more open, is encouraging, as Elliot says, these choices?
Let me try to unpack that question quickly. The medical and psychological professions have changed in that they're now endorsing transition services as a medical necessity. And so decades ago, really, with less understanding, with pathologizing of gender variant people who would want to go see someone if that was not accepted and endorsed. There is more information out there, and with information out there, people, including children, can see themselves more clearly in what's represented and get that mirrored back to them. And that helps them understand what they're already experiencing. We're not introducing an internal experience to them. They're trying to find words and ways to understand what they know about themselves. Now, I want to refer to one thing, which is for Elliot and anyone else. If you think society has gotten too permissive, I suggest you go on the internet and you look up the 2015 United States Transgender Survey put out by the National Center for Transgender Equality, because it documents the extensive rate of mistreatment at work, homelessness, being expelled from families, 77% of children, people as children having negative experiences in school because they're transgender, the suicide rate that Lynn's mentioned, being underemployed just in the last year, 30% being mistreated or fired at work because of being transgender. So anyone who thinks, oh, it's gotten too permissive, please look up the facts. And this study was based on 27,715 trans individuals who responded.
That survey is on our website, along with a whole bunch of other links. Again, it's nhpr.org/exchange. Jerry, Lynn's mentioned suicide, and I wonder if earlier generations of transgender people who were not allowed to express that just ended up taking their own lives.
Yes, that's the easy question. That's the easy answer. I've been contacted by other transgender people over the years who have been suicidal. And part of helping these folks is to have a voice available for them to call. I was driving a tractor trailer for 5 years, and I drive through the night. And I told my friends back here to give me a call at any time if they were feeling down. And they did. They were people that were really concerned about where they were going and how it fit in with their family issues. And that still continues on, especially if they've got a family that's not accepting of them. And so they worry about those situations and how they're going to continue to fit in their society.
Well, Elliot, again, we appreciate the call. And here's a email from Heather in Amherst, who says, I have a question in regard to puberty blockers. When I was a child, I was definitely a tomboy, someone my parents might have assumed could be transgender. However, once puberty occurred, I developed into a heterosexual female without the other elements of being boyish. Heather says, aren't puberty and hormones important to a child developing their gender identity? I'm concerned that if a child is given puberty blockers, they might not be able to develop their final identities. Now, our pediatric endocrinologist, Dr. Charest, is not with us anymore, but can you talk about that, Rachel, a little bit?
Yeah, so I think most of the rationale behind using a puberty blocker would be to actually give someone some time to really consider their identity, and it's not irreversible. So if that blocker is removed, then your body would go through the puberty that would have started without the blocker. The benefit of it is that if we can give people some time to get to an age where they feel more comfortable about their decisions, and then they decide to use gender-affirming hormones to move towards the other gender, then that gives them the freedom to do so if they choose.
Okay, Dr. Cody, I want to ask about that too after a short break. Okay, so stay with us.
Hello, thanks for subscribing and for listening to The Exchange podcast. I'm Andrew Perella. I'm the production manager at New Hampshire Public Radio, where The Exchange is produced. And I'm here with Christina Phillips, who's one of the producers on The Exchange. How's it going, Christina?
I'm great. Thanks for having me here.
Excellent, excellent. So I suppose you have heard about this crazy new initiative, Tripod.
Yeah, yeah. So all this month, we're asking you to tell a friend about a podcast you love. So maybe it's somebody who's never listened to podcasts before. Maybe they're a radio listener, or maybe they don't listen to the radio at all and they don't know anything about NPR, but they've got a phone and you might want to introduce them to some podcasts.
Exactly. What we're basically asking you to do is become a missionary for the pod sphere. We want you to go out and find someone you know who doesn't podcast and encourage them to podcast by recommending a podcast you think they'd love. So, Christina, what are you listening to these days?
I listen to a lot of podcasts.
Yeah.
I have so many on my phone that I don't have any music because I don't have room for music. One that I've been listening to a lot recently is Reveal, which nice. Comes from the Center for Investigative Reporting, NPRX. And basically what they do is they take a story, a lead, and they investigate it over a long period of time. They've got a team of journalists, and they go in and they report on something maybe that's related to current events or maybe not. So recently they investigated in California a medical marijuana grower who is a small farmer, and he's struggling now that big industry is coming into California, now that they've got legalized marijuana, legalized medical marijuana, and recreational marijuana. So they investigated that, and that was super interesting, and I knew nothing about it. So yeah, it's a great, great podcast.
Sounds like it's right up the alley of Exchange listeners. So anyone who's a fan of the Exchange would enjoy something like Reveal, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. And I think it's really great storytelling as well. And you hear from some experts that we've probably had on the show in the past. Who knows? Because we have so many great guests. So yeah.
So you heard it here, folks. If you're digging podcasts, recommend the Exchange, recommend Reveal to a friend or loved one. And you can tell us what you're listening to by, what is it?
And so you want to use the hashtag TryPod. That's T-R-Y pod. You see what we did there? Yeah. So let us know what you've recommended, and we'll be recommending too.
All right. Keep listening.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, exploring transgender and gender identity. The Exchange number for you to join us with your questions, comments, 1-800-892-6477. Send email to exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And all of you, just before the break, we were talking about an email from Heather, who was concerned about hormone blockers. Again, Heather says, aren't puberty and hormones important to a child developing their gender identity? She said, I'm concerned that if a child is given puberty blockers, they might not be able to develop their final identities. And I know, Dr. Cody, you want to jump in on that. Go ahead.
Well, children who are given hormone blockers in what was originally called the Dutch protocol, but now more than 30 places in the U.S. are doing this, they've already been brought into medical and psychological care. This is not a snap decision. These are children who have been expressing fairly strong identification with another gender. And so the decision is made to block puberty from starting, because once it starts, changes happen that make it much harder for the person to reverse them. And if they are going to transition and take gender-affirming hormones. So it really isn't a quick decision. It's, and Dr. Norman Spack at GEMS down at Boston Children's Hospital has started this in the U.S., and others are doing it, where it's sort of like block puberty and then allow the child time to consolidate that this is who they are. At 16, perhaps, if appropriate, you can start gender-affirming hormones, and then 18 or later, usually, surgery, if that's deemed appropriate. So,
but Heather seems to be saying that the hormones themselves that would be blocked help the child decide who they are.
The hormones usually have more to do, and I'll defer to Rachel, too, as medical professional here, but the hormones have more to do with feelings of attraction and sexuality. And I think we're confusing sexuality and gender identity in this discussion at a few points. Oh, so my gender identity is how I understand myself, and then who I'm attracted to is my sexual orientation.
Linz, I know you want to jump in. Rachel, and then we'll get another call. Go ahead.
Sure. I think that ultimately medical decisions are between an individual and their doctor, and it's not necessarily our place as outside people to question what an individual and, you know, their family, if they're underage.
Sure, if they're children, it's a little different.
With their doctor, I trust them to make the right decision if they're listening to their kid and what they're saying. I also really want to outline for people, because I think that this can be very confusing, the difference between gender identity and gender expression. So a person's gender identity is male, female, or neither, like myself. Gender expression has more to do with what clothes you like to wear, what activities do you like to do, are those what we think about as masculine, feminine, androgynous, and people can be any combination of that. I myself am a non-binary person, and some of my interests and the things I like to wear fall into feminine, masculine, androgynous, and that's okay. There are also people who were born female, identify with that completely, and happen to like things that society views as masculine. And that is a very different place to be in, and then questioning your gender identity or being very sure of your gender identity.
Rachel, do you also want to address this?
Yeah, I think that if we're going to have an intervention of using a puberty blocker, it's because someone's identity has already been explicitly expressed and consistently expressed. So I think that from my perspective, I've heard from a lot of clients that puberty was a really, really difficult time for them. And it can be traumatic to develop secondary sex characteristics if that is not congruent with your identity. And so I think that there's a lot of risks of not treating with hormone blockers where it's appropriate. And that's the perspective that I'm coming from on that issue.
Well, Heather, thank you for the email. Let's go back to the phones. And Amy's in Merrimack. Hi, Amy. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Hi. How are you?
Fine.
Good. My question revolves around actually biology. Isn't a transgender person actually born with a brain that more matches their gender identity as compared to the sexual organ that they're actually born with?
Well, Amy, thank you for the question. And we talked about this a little bit earlier, but go ahead, Jerry, because in some cases, yes, but in other cases, not so much.
Well, I was always a feminine child. A feminine boy in a masculine world. So I had to fight that. Now, whether my brain is different or not, I don't know.
Haven't had your brain scanned.
No, not recently. So that's a tough question because there's a lot of medical information that we're still trying to understand. There's lots of research in this area. And because we exist, and a lot of people don't understand, even from a medical field. So part of it is to really understand it better.
Dr. Cody?
As Jerry said, there are not conclusive studies, but there are studies that are indicating that there are brain differences that would fit with that hypothesis.
But we talked earlier, Lynce, about how, okay, in some cases, yes, but in other cases like yours, maybe not so much.
Yeah, I'm not particularly interested in knowing the exact brain chemistry that I have and how that aligns with or without gender. I think, again, it just really goes back to listening to people's experiences and how they feel.
Did you want to jump back in?
Well, the people we call men and women in the society have more in common biologically than they have different. And so I think sometimes we're exploding the differences into something much larger than they actually are.
You're not buying the whole Mars-Venus thing?
No.
Okay. Thank you for that call, Amy. And let's go to Stephanie in Conway. Hi, Stephanie. Go ahead.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm also a transgender woman who socially transitioned about 3 months ago, but I've been in transition for over a decade for a lot of reasons. Took my time, but I've also known since my earliest memories that it was transgender. Unfortunately, back in those days, much like Jerry, there was no word for it even at that point. There was no discussion. There was no option to explore that thing. And I just want to reference that into the comments that I heard earlier from another caller, as well as other other conversations I've had with other people saying that, you know, children at such a young age shouldn't go down this path. They shouldn't be given these options because it might lead them to places where they shouldn't be. We've always been transgender. I certainly can speak for myself. I've been transgender, and I've known about that since age 4. You know, I'm 61 now. And it's just it's something I always felt like was just something I was born with. And I think it's wonderful that the younger generation now has a chance to not have to go through all the pain that a lot of us older trans people did.
Stephanie, if I could ask you a question, and boy, changing your identity in your 60s is a big deal. What was your family's reaction?
My children, I've got 3 children. They're wonderful, lovely children, totally supportive. I'm married to my wife of 31 years. It's been very challenging for her. But in my family of origin, siblings, most of them are confused, surprised, and struggling with it in some ways, but overall accepting of that reality. But there's a lot of collateral damage that occurs and so much difficulty in reversing the effects of hormones on our bodies that I think it's wonderful that children have this option early, not only to prevent the psychological pain, but the pain to other people that now have to deal with me as an older person who've known all their lives as Steve, and now suddenly I'm Stephanie, and they have to deal with that. It's a challenge for everybody. Mm. That's why I just think these younger kids now that have that option in life, it's so much better for them. I think it's better for everybody around them.
Okay. Stephanie, thank you for calling. Do you want to jump in, Jerry? Similar story.
Yes, very similar. I think the challenges that especially older transgender people had faced, there weren't a whole lot of people that understood from the medical field, whether it was therapy or endocrinologists back then. So even if we could go out and search for therapists, they didn't understand who we are today. And we have an advantage today in that we have people that have understood how to work with transgender people, how to work with transgender children. And the transgender children that we meet nowadays are normal. They socialize in the gender that they identify with at a very young age. So for all intents and purposes, people don't see them any differently. And the same thing I ran into with Stephanie, that Stephanie mentioned, is having been who I am for many years, and when I started to come out, people didn't know how to understand. And I lost my job because I told people I would be coming out, and within a couple of months, I was in a group of people that were laid off, and they couldn't tell me why I was in that group.
Thank you for the call, Stephanie. Let's go to Lacey in Manchester. Hi, Lacey. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much.
Sure.
So my question is, it kind of comes from my professional background. I work as an advanced EMT for a private ambulance service.
Okay.
And we end up running into quite a few transitioning people for psychological transfers. And we do have, as a profession, some training in that to make it a comfortable space so that they're willing to talk to us. Me and my coworkers were having a conversation the other day of how do we appropriately speak as a patient advocate when, say, we are taking somebody who is in transition for, like, cardiac care. Say they happen to have a heart attack or they have a GI problem, they're getting transferred to a hospital for that. One, a really appropriate way for us to be a very positive patient advocate? And then the other question is when it comes to rooms in a hospital, where is there appropriate room, and at what point do hospitals make the decision of where a man in transition to being a woman gets to be in a room with another woman?
Wow, that's getting down to just the daily stuff, isn't it, Lacey? And trying to be respectful, but, you know, you're also in an emergency situation there.
Yeah, we try to be respectful, and a lot of my coworkers are very supportive. In college, I got some training on how to be a trans advocate for people who are having issues, but it was more on the college level of, hey, this is a safe place if you feel you need to go out. But when we're transferring somebody and it's mostly, you know, cardiac, only because that's the most recent patient example I have at the moment.
Sure. Well, Lacey, let's talk about this a little bit. And I'm not sure who wants to. Paul, do you want to take this?
I can start.
You know, here she is. She's in an emergency situation. She's got to probably fill out a form that checks the male or female box and then has to decide which room to put the person in. In the meantime, she's just trying to make sure they don't go into cardiac arrest.
First, I want to congratulate her and her coworkers for the advocacy they're doing. And in terms of being a patient advocate, if you found out from the patient if they're able to communicate or if their loved ones are able to communicate their preferred name and their identity, that is something that you could be communicating to when you're transferring the patient. You can indicate that in your records. There is a problem about electronic health records that many of them are still very binary. And for medical records, if the person hasn't legally changed their name, you need to use their legal name. But there needs to be a place that preferred name can be stated. And then the whole issue about assigning rooms and things around binary gender system is a whole problem that needs to be tackled in a larger discussion.
Yeah, how do you do that? I mean, in the hospital, you know, women are supposed to be in the room together when you've got two people in a room, and men are supposed to be in a room together when you've got two people in a room. I'm looking at you, Jerry. How is Lacey supposed to figure that out? And what about the other person who's already in the room who might be uncomfortable?
It is a challenge. To try and figure out where to place someone. On the other hand, most of the hospital rooms are much more privater than they were years ago. So there is the challenge, and it comes down to how the person identifies and if they can express where they would feel most comfortable. Because a lot of times a transgender woman, if they're in transition, will not be comfortable with other men in the same room because we identify as women. And that's the same thing in a restroom. People say, oh, well, there's a man going into the room. But that person doesn't identify as a man and probably hasn't most of their life. And so those people need to be aware that they have a special need, but they will probably be a really good partner in a room too.
What about the other person in the hospital room though, who isn't quite sure who is this person coming in and why did they put them in this room with me? You know, I'm male.
Are those questions any different than having another person come into the room? As long as they're not looking under the sheets, they may never know. And if someone has transitioned, they won't know at all.
Did you want to jump in, Rachel?
Yeah, I think I agree completely with Jerry. I would, if as much information as you can get from a patient or their loved ones, and if what we're really concerned about is a patient's safety and their privacy, which is what we're concerned about with all of our patients, we really should be putting people in a room that is appropriate for their gender identity.
Let's take one more question, and this is Andrew in Stratford. Hi, Andrew. Go ahead. You're in the exchange. Welcome.
Hi. I was wondering if the physical body is going through one change and the brain is perceiving something different. Is it normal or is it considered a mental health or a mental illness?
Dr. Cody, that's actually a really good question because you're going to get the name of the man you're wrong, but the statistical, what is it? The psychological statistic,
diagnostic. The diagnostic manual.
Thank you.
Diagnostic.
Right.
DSM-5. Let's
right.
just call it that. Okay. Diagnostic and statistical manual of mental disorders.
I was close.
Yep. In 2013, the American Psychiatric Association, which publishes that, made a very significant change because it used to be called gender identity disorder, which was a misnomer because it was saying the identity was the disorder. It's not. Now it's gender dysphoria, which indicates the extreme distress and discomfort people have with their morphology, with their body, with the way people are attributing gender to them, which doesn't match their gender identity. That's the issue. And treating that dysphoria is where we are treating a psychological problem. People can get that treated. Often transition is a part of that. And then the dysphoria goes away.
Do you want to have a last thought for us, Linz? Because your story's really interesting and is another step in this path that we've been talking about.
Yeah, I know that I am someone who has benefited from therapy, and once I was able to be comfortable in myself in a community, I have folks who supported me. A lot of that dysphoria has decreased. I also really want to acknowledge, as part of Freedom New Hampshire, that I think a lot of the trans community here is worried and uncertain about non-discrimination protections after the bill has been tabled. And I really want to reassure people that Freedom New Hampshire is continuing to do this work for non-discrimination protections until we win. And we'll be sharing our stories with legislators and other people all across the state in the coming years to come.
Well, we'll put links on our website. Also, if you didn't get a chance to get on the air and you have comments or concerns or questions, you can go to our Facebook page. Again, NHPR Exchange. And Linz J. Cowes, Dr. Paul Cody, Jerry Cannon, Rachel Allen. Thanks, everybody, very much for being here. We appreciate
it. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.